Welcome to the Manly Pinterest Manly Tip Show. Pinterest Tip
Show. Hello, folks. Welcome to the Manly Pinterest Tips Podcast. I'm Jeff C., and you're not. Today, we're going to be talking about capturing some marketing magic for your business and what it really is going to take to get your business noticed online this year. But first, I wanted to offer you a special deal to just you, my podcast listeners. If you ever wanted some help with Pinterest or visual marketing, I'm offering for just you guys a special $100 off a Pick Jeff's Brain consultation. If you need help with Pinterest, live video, visual marketing, I am here to help. Just go to manlypinteresttips.com/podcast special to get the special price. That's manlypinteresttips.com/podcast special. My guest for today's show is one of the first co-hosts of the Manly Pinterest Tip Show way back in the days of Google+. Mike Alton is one of my oldest online friends that has really developed into a deep offline friendship as well. And if you don't know who Mike is, he's a content marketing practitioner. It's a title he invented to represent his holistic approach to content marketing that leverages blogging, social media, email marketing, and SEO to drive traffic, generate leads, and to convert those leads into sales. He's an award-winning blogger, speaker, and author, and brand evangelist at Agora Pulse. Mike has helped me tremendously on my online journey, and I know his advice will be super valuable to you as well. So let's jump right into my conversation with Mike Alton. Thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, man. Yeah, this background is kind of like very psychedelic, like all these little things moving are buttons you know, have to push.
Hope somebody gets sick. Happen. So we'll see what happens here. So let's talk about Agora Pulse, because the brand evangelist, First of all, what is that? And for those of you who don't know, we want you to know what Agora Pulse is and what it does. So kind of take a few minutes and kind of explain what that is.
Yeah, yet another title that I actually invented. I shouldn't say event. That's not true. I didn't invent the title, but I did make it up. It's not what other brand evangelists are. Like Guy Kawasaki, who we were talking about before the show, he was and is a brand evangelist for a lot of brands, which means he's like the figurehead, the one person who's like the face of that brand. Mm-hmm. That's actually not what I do. I manage the other people who are the faces of our brand. I manage our ambassadors and our affiliates and the influencers that we have relationships with. So that's what I do with Agora Pulse. And those who don't know, Agora Pulse is a social media management tool. It's one of the best social media management tools. It's the highest rated social media tool, which means it's the tool that people love the best, which is pretty stinking awesome. We're from the city of love. We're from Paris. That's where our home office and our founders are, right? Everybody loves Agora Pulse. And it's true. It's a really nice tool to use. It's a tool that people, they save a lot of time, and that's really what they love the most about it. It's easy to use, and It saves them time when it comes to social media marketing and how you're managing your posting and your engagement and how you're dealing with all the stuff that comes into you, comments, replies, mentions, the full gambit across all the major social networks. Agora Pulse kind of helps you deal with all that in one place.
Very, very cool. So full disclosure, I am an ambassador as well for Agora Pulse, but I was using them way before I was an ambassador.
All the cool kids are.
Yeah, all the cool. But I was using it before, you know, that. And so love it. And so I would never recommend anything that I don't use and love. And so we're going to talk a little bit how I use it kind of later on in the show. But I wanted to let you kind of explain what that is right up the front. So we're talking about marketing magic today. I almost wanted to call you Magic Mike, but then I didn't want to have that visual for people. You know,
but now it's there.
Now it's there. And so we're going to have to deal with it. So what does it take to be a good marketer in 2019? So that's kind of a broad statement. What do you think it takes in today's world?
Holy cow. Well, there's a lot that'll go into that, right? I think it starts with paying attention to how marketing is changing and evolving. You can't do marketing today like you did 10 years ago or 5 years ago. Maybe even a couple of years ago, right? Because things change so rapidly in this space compared to other industries. Now, I'm not going to be dramatic here and say things are changing every single day. That's not quite true. Right. Some of us like to say that. Some of us like to say that the platforms change every day. It's not really true, but things do change like a lot, way more than other industries, right? My stepdad and his sons, they're dentists. They're pretty much doing the same dental practice that they've been doing right for years because it's pretty standard now. Marketing, you got to keep up. And by keeping up, that means paying attention to what the social networks are doing, paying attention to other trends, not necessarily being trendy, not necessarily being being on the cutting edge, but paying attention and being mindful of what's happening so that you can position yourself or your client businesses or, you know, whatever role it is that you're doing marketing,
right,
so that you can take advantage of those, right? So a good example today would be real quick, augmented reality and virtual reality, right? Those are things that not every business needs to be actually employing today, but it's coming. And so as a business owner or as a marketer, you probably should begin to be aware of what's coming in that field, because you don't want your competition to all of a sudden be able to take advantage of a technology and outpace you just because you weren't paying attention. Right. Another great example is artificial intelligence and chatbots. This is probably a little closer to home, right? Because now that's a little more accessible. Anybody can sign up for a mini chat account.
Right.
And start creating chatbots for their Facebook pages. That's something most businesses should be at least considering today, if not actually employing. So yeah, that's a really big part for me is paying attention to what's going on.
Very cool. So like the augmented reality, I mean, that, you know, 2 years ago, that probably wasn't even a thing. I mean, it would be like at Disneyland and there'd be, you know, super, but it's interesting, you know, how stuff has changed, you know, so quickly in that field. So some of these fields just pop up and then they take off that we wouldn't even have thought about, you know, 2 years ago.
I mean, for those of you listening who maybe don't even know what I'm talking about, pay attention to brands like IKEA, where you can open up the IKEA app on your phone and you can point it at your living room and choose furniture that you could buy from IKEA and have it placed in the viewfinder so that you could see what a particular couch would look like. Now, obviously, it's not going to show you the hour it's going to take you to put together, but it's going to show you what it looks like right in your living room so that you can think about whether or not you might want to purchase that. So now think about the other furniture brands who don't have that. Mm-hmm. Right. And if you're at home and you're trying to design a space and you have that capability at your fingertips from a brand like IKEA, but you don't from, say, I don't know, Wayfair, which one are you going to automatically go with? Well, you're going to go with the one that's going to make it easier for you to make that purchase.
Right. Right. I want to give a shout out to Amanda Robertson and Scott who are in the audience. Thanks, guys, for stopping by. I'd bring your comment up, but I forgot to turn on a thing that I needed to turn on. See, new show. That's what happens. You have to tune in next week and see my very cool comment screen. But anyway,
cool looking. Oh my gosh, you can't turn it on now, huh?
Well, I tried to do it, and I have to log on to Facebook.
Oh shoot!
And you know, we'll see. Okay, I'm going to ask you a question. You answer it, and I'll see if I can.
I'll answer. You mess with that.
I'll see if I can. So I know you recently taught at a college, and have you done this more than once? And what are some of the most surprising questions that you're getting from students? Like things that you were like, you know, either I thought they knew that already, or wow, they're really thinking about this. You know, I was kind of shocked. So I want to know, because I think they use technology. I mean, came out with a phone in their hand. And so, you know, what are they thinking of the market? Another bad image. Sorry about that. But what do you think is the most shocking thing you've heard from them so far?
Well, that was pretty shocking.
That was that shocking
right there. Thank you for that. I speak at the University of Missouri, St. Louis, which is obviously very close to home. I teach there pretty much every semester. And then I also did a remote live session for the University of Wisconsin, which is pretty cool. Shout out to my Big Ten roots. Mm-hmm. And I'm doing another one next week to National University for our friend Kendra Loshi. So I usually teach blogging. So in full disclosure, this usually isn't like cutting edge stuff. We're talking about what to write, how long those posts should be, how often you should publish. So I guess for me, probably the most surprising thing is simply the fact that these college students are asking the same questions that business owners are asking. So they're super smart. I did a session a week and a half ago. It was a Saturday session, again, here at UMSL. That was for adults who were taking a social media boot camp at the college. And these were mostly business owners, and they were a lot of like veterans and that sort of thing who were getting, you know, funding for their college education.
Right.
And they were asking the same questions as the 18, 19, 20-year-olds that I was talking to at the University of Wisconsin. Madison. So they wanted to know things like, oh, you know, obviously, how long should a blog post be? That's one of the basic questions that everybody wants to know, mostly right. because we don't want to write long blog posts. And they're really hoping that Mike tells them, you don't have to write long blog posts. It's okay. And they're always disappointed when I say, no, you have to write really long blog posts. The longer, the better. And then they walk away and they cry and then they hate me. So that's, you know, kind of an unfortunate situation there, little byproduct of my answer. But I'm trying to think what else they might have asked. They do often ask about like trending social media. Mm-hmm. Like, what do I think about newer networks that are popping up? And usually my default answer there is it's really fun. It's really interesting to dive into newer networks or networks that are maybe growing a little bit. But to be cautious from a business perspective.
Okay.
So like LinkedIn, for instance, is not a new network, of course, but they're coming out with live video. And so it's kind of the same mentality there. You know, should a business try to jump onto LinkedIn live video? And my usual answer is no. As a business, you want to focus on what you're doing, but you want to be mindful of it. Harken back to my first comment, which is to be mindful of marketing trends, right? So be thinking as a business owner how you might leverage LinkedIn live video if it makes sense for your brand. If you've got some familiarity there, if you don't, we have resources and people right. we can refer you to who can help you with live video. So that's one of the more interesting questions I get, I suppose.
Right. So
have I talked long enough for you to fix comments
I'm still working on it, but I've got a follow-up question. So, okay. Cause I really want to show that off because I worked long and hard hours on that.
Yeah, it was cool. I want you to show it off.
You talked about somebody who knows how to do live video. Maybe we should get them in here. Let's see.
If only we knew somebody.
So, okay. So you talked about kind of the difference with what you've been seeing there and some of the so shocking stuff, but what would you tell a recent graduate? Like, I know you have people like are applying somewhere and I have people even ask me like, hey, you know, what would it take to work for you? Or what do you need? What are you looking for? If you're going to hire somebody, what do you tell these recent graduates who, you know, wanting to get into marketing, you know, before, I mean, it's not really the Mad Men anymore sitting there with their bourbon and sitting around a hopefully not, they maybe some sitting around with bourbon, but about a big conference table and they're pitching ideas. It's not really that much in marketing anymore. You kind of have to have a wide skill set. So what do you tell them?
Well, interestingly, I think it's actually still a lot like that. Maybe really? Not the environment that the Mad Men were, you know, sitting in with the bourbon right. and the cigarettes and yeah. everything like that. Yeah. But the most important aspects of marketing actually haven't changed. The technology, the delivery, the medium, that stuff obviously is evolving on a daily basis. But when people ask me, they go into marketing and they say, Mike, what should I focus on? My number one answer is probably going to surprise you, writing.
Really?
You're not going to go far in marketing if you're not a good writer.
Even with all the video stuff. And I don't necessarily
mean, well, that's the thing. You still have to be able to communicate. So you could broaden that to say you have to be a really good communicator. But even with the video stuff, you still have to be a good writer. You still have to describe the video. You still have to create tweets and other kinds of social commentary. If you are applying for a job, that's going to be written in some way. You're going to write a resume and a cover letter and all these kinds mm-hmm. of things. So it's the writing, the communication via writing, that is usually the first impression you are going to give as either an individual, as a marketer, or as a brand. First thing I'm going to do is I'm going to read something out of your digital profile, whatever that might be. Then I might watch a video. Then I might listen to you. Then I might look at some graphics, right? Then I might have you on a phone call or something like that. But the writing is usually what precedes all those kinds of mediums. So if you can't write, if you can't communicate in that way, you're going to struggle to find success, I think. The corollary there is if you're an excellent writer, even again, if you know, we're not necessarily talking about long blog articles, but if you can communicate really, really well in written form, mm-hmm. you're going to have a lot more success, a lot easier, I think, particularly getting into marketing. Because I'll tell you right now, you know, we're interviewing for Agorapulse for a position there. And right now it's all written stuff. I want to see what people will write in a tweet. And I want to see what people will write in a Facebook post. You know, all the resumes that came in were written. I mean, there was one person that submitted a video along with a written resume.
Okay. So yeah, so I would agree because I still like write out my my talks. I write out, yeah. I mean, like even these questions, I always have questions ready just in case, you know, I get a guest on and I have to pull stuff out of them. And I most like right now we're just kind of going and you're letting me fiddle fart with this stuff because it's not working. But I think I still write everything, even if it's like headlines, like you said, or I still script out my videos, even if I'm going to memorize it to speak to the camera, or even a teleprompter, you still got to write. So I think that's a good piece of advice is learn how to write. And then I would say, you know, I think the best marketers know how to do more than one thing. You know, mm-hmm. You start with writing and you get really good at writing. Well, I think you need to have more than just, do you know of anybody who just all they do? I mean, I know there's copywriters, all they do is copyright, but yeah. Do you see that going, those copywriters having to branch out and like, I can't just be a copywriter. I've got to be a video person too, or I got to learn how to, you know, run a social media platform. Do you think that's kind of the sign of the times as well?
Yeah. Well, I think you've nailed it in that if all you can do is write, then you're a writer, you're a copywriter, a scripter, whatever the case might be, whatever kind of writing you're doing, you're not really a full-fledged marketer at that point. You can't be because you haven't understand or grasped, or you haven't had the time or whatever, you know, whatever the reason is. The platforms, mm-hmm. the technology, the other techniques, how to develop strategy. Obviously, there's just so much more right. to marketing than the writing. It just starts with the writing. So yeah, to be a good marketer, you're absolutely right. You got to be able to do more. You have to be able to embrace some of these platforms, which you really might say then the skill set is a desire and an ability to learn more in this marketing space, which means, you know, this combination of tech mm-hmm. and social networks, they're part tech, but they're also sociological microcultures, which right. is this really interesting yeah. thing, uh-huh. right? It's very unique. It's hard to compare it to something else, but it's kind of like a neighborhood where there's an HOA. So there are some rules and there are different people that live in that neighborhood and they all have their own interests and their own priorities, but they also all live in the same place, which means we all want our neighborhood to be safe. We all want our homes and each other's homes to look nice right. and those kinds of things. And so there are these sociological norms, we call them, that crop up in neighborhoods and they crop up in real societies and they crop up on social media. And so a good marketer, a lot of this might be subconscious, right? But a good marketer is going to be in tune to the social norms and mores of the individual networks. In other words, they're going to know, or at least set out to learn, what works and what doesn't work on Facebook and Twitter and Instagram and LinkedIn and beyond just the pure technical. Yeah, we all know I can post text, I can post a link, I can post a photo to almost all the social networks now. And pretty soon you're going to be able to post live video to virtually every social network. So right. the functionality is going to become ubiquitous. But what works? Will this broadcast and this type of content work just as well on LinkedIn? Don't know, not until you try. And obviously right. it's brand new, so nobody knows. Right. Right. But we're going to find pretty soon that those kinds of things will work. Yet live streaming a game, which is super popular on other platforms, right? Live streaming me playing Halo, that's a thing on like right. Twitch, right? Yeah. And other yeah. networks.
Or even
will
Facebook.
That work on yeah. LinkedIn? My guess is not. My guess is that the social culture that has developed on that particular network will push back. And we've seen that happen many times when people try to do, LinkedIn's a great example, when people try to do really personal things on LinkedIn, like they post personal photos or they talk about dating and those kinds of things. The LinkedIn community complains about that. Just like your neighbor complains because you haven't mowed your lawn in a week, right? It's mm-hmm. the same exact thing. There's no rule that says you can't post about your parties or your personal things on LinkedIn. And there's no rule that says in most communities that you've got to mow your lawn every single week. But society or the micro society that's on those networks looks at that. So that's something I think that's a really good skill and a really good piece of experience for marketers to have.
So do you think, and I've seen a lot of people say this, so I want to know your opinion. Do you think that the best marketers are going to be niche marketers? where there isn't a jack of all trades that somebody runs everything.
What do we mean by best, right? What is best? That's hard to say.
Like, it's still right now, so I need you to run my social media. So you're going to have to run all this stuff. But then I think I'm also seeing, and I'm getting more clients too this way myself, is like, I just want you to run Pinterest and Instagram, or I just want you to run Pinterest, or I just want you to, you know. So do you think there's going to be super specialized people? And I've seen this kind of already with Messenger bots. Amanda is a great example, who's in the audience. She has, she does Facebook, ads, and she has a course on Facebook, but also she's really into Messenger bots and would be considered an expert in there. And I know that she's been hired by people just to create those bots. And so do you think that's going to be the wave of the future? It'll be just like, I'm a Facebook bot creator. That's all I do. If you want to hire me, that's it. Do you think there'll be more and more specializations like that?
I think, yes, you're right in that there will be a continuing move towards that, because it's good for the individuals and it's good for the businesses, right? If I want to implement the best possible bot for my system, I can teach myself or I can hire an expert, right? And what's a better use of my time and my money? Probably to hire the expert. So that's great. And we'll see more of that. But there's always got to be somebody in the business, in the organization, who can take a high level, big picture view and say, should we use bots? What else do we do besides bots? What content do we create? What social channels are we on? What video are we creating? Why? Who's the visualization or the voice of the company in that kind of media? What's our message? What's our branding? Those are big picture questions that it's great when you've got a specialist like Amanda who actually can help you with all of that and can at least see where the bots fit into the bigger picture. But you still have to have that big picture. So I still think you're going to have both in an ideal scenario, right? You're still going to have the CMOs and the high-level executives and high-level marketers who are taking that big picture view, and then they're bringing in team members and consultants and freelancers and so on who are specialists in specific things.
Gotcha. So we talk about, like, I like to talk about visual marketing on the show. That's kind of what it started with, and we, started all Pinterest, and then we branched out to visual marketing. So what is your favorite, like Pinterest and Instagram? Because I think of those as visual networks. I mean, YouTube is too, but Pinterest and Instagram, like, really visual. So what's your favorite one that you use personally, like when you want to have fun? Which one do you kind of gravitate to?
It's kind of a trick question, right? Because I'm a writer in each of the two non-writing social networks. So in the interest of fairness and full disclosure, honestly, neither one are my favorite social network, even for personal use. But when it comes to personal use, Instagram is probably what I turn to the most.
Really?
I'll open Instagram. I'll look at, friends' stories. Those are becoming really interesting. I love what people are doing lately, with stories. You still have people that, they're basically sharing the same thing to a story as they would to a feed.
Right.
And I get it. It's all right. It's a new medium. We're still kind of sorting that out. We're still developing that microculture for stories. Because again, that's what's going to happen. They'll have a microculture around stories. I just intimated at that, right? There's a moray there that some people are breaking by sharing the exact same picture to their feed as they do to their story. But that aside, some people are sharing some really clever, cute, short videos, just little clips and that sort of thing, which is really charming. And so that's fun for me as an individual, particularly in this space where I've connected with so many different people around the world.
Right.
It's a great way for me to catch up and see what everybody's doing, professionally and personally.
So what do you think gives you the most traction professionally out of those networks?
Pinterest.
Really? Because of traffic?
Total opposite, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. I spend almost no time on Pinterest personally. Not to say that I don't use Pinterest personally, but when I do, and we've talked about this before, Pinterest is for dreamers, right? Mm-hmm. So I use Pinterest personally when I need to plan something or I'm researching something or something like that, right? So I'll create a new board and, I'm going to be moving soon. I'm going to have a new office. I'm going to have to plan out what that's going to look like. So once I know what the room looks like, I'll start pinning ideas and collecting ideas so that I can design that space the way I want it to look. Great example for how I'll use Pinterest personally. That might be 3 months from now, and I might not use Pinterest personally until then. But professionally, I use Tailwind, which is, you know, another, you know, tool that we both love a lot. I use Tailwind all the time. I've got pins that are going there all the time on a regular basis using their cool loop, smart loop feature. Mm-hmm. And then whenever I publish something new, which is usually about once a week, I'm sharing it to tribes. I'm sharing it to boards. I'm scheduling that out and driving tons of engagement and traffic.
Cool. Yeah. So Pinterest for me, as well as traffic, it just always, and it's one of those set it and forget it kind of things. If you, I mean, there's, don't get me wrong. You can hire me and I'll give you strategy. It's not that simple. So,
but, yeah, let's roll that back a little bit.
Rewind. No, but I mean, it's to me, it started as a hobby. And so, you know, then, so I enjoy it. And so it's professional and, you know, personal for me as well. But I think your point is true that you don't have to spend, and it is a place to go dream. That's why I drive so much traffic. That's why, you know, you and I both talk about that. And, when you get that evergreen stuff coming back and back, I mean, I think it's really, really powerful, especially for bloggers, because it ties right into, mm-hmm. you know, your kind of niche area. So what do you think, you know, we talked about visual marketing, Pinterest and Instagram. What do you think the trends are going to be in the visual marketing space? You mentioned stories, and that's kind of got that multicultural, microcosm kind of thing. What do you think else is happening with visual marketing? Because I know TikTok is a big thing that I keep seeing in the news. My kids are talking about, I mean, is that something you think is going to come down the pike that us grubby little marketers can't wait to get our, you know, our hands on and destroy like we do everything else? What do you think is the next big thing?
Well, that's inevitable, right? And some people blame the marketers. I don't. I blame the networks, and right. I blame the reality of capitalism, mm-hmm. right? The networks have to make money to survive and thrive. They're not going to make money just because 12-year-olds are using the system. It doesn't work that way. Mm-hmm. So that means they have to sell something. And either they monetize the network itself in some way, which usually doesn't equate well to high usage, right? If I charge you $20 a month to use my network and there's alternatives that are free, which one are you going to go with, right? And once I start selling ads, you know, that's when you start to get people complaining about the experience. So that's my tangent response to marketers ruin everything. It's not the marketers. It's reality. Reality ruins everything. So no, but in terms of trends in visual marketing, it's hard to say in terms of the specific networks. I do like that the creation of good visual assets is becoming easier and easier for people to do. Mm-hmm. I'm becoming much better at creating visual assets, and other marketers and other business owners and so on are becoming much better at it. The tools are getting easier. The tools are getting more intuitive to use. And in fact, what's happening, boy, I'm very sociological today, because what's happening at a much deeper level is, as a society, we're becoming more familiar with how these things work. Right. A few years ago, you could have talked to somebody about drop shadow and they might not know what you were talking about, but now they do. Now they understand terms like drop shadow and layers in images. I mean, but before Canva and some of these other tools, the only reason you would have known anything about layers is if you were a Photoshop nerd. And I'm looking at you, Jeff.
I know, I was. So, and by the way,
but now people know that. So it makes
Canva
sense.
Canva doesn't have layers. You're wrong.
Easel
has them, which is why I've been using Easel. I think the tools are there. It's coming down to storytelling. One of the things I think about, and my talk at Social Media Marketing World is going to have I'm going to have to switch it up because I want to talk about this, is I think disruptive visuals is going to be the thing that people are going to want to do, because everything there's like on Instagram, every photo is beautiful. Mostly. I mean, most of the time, the people you're following, the popular ones, they're professional photos. What makes you stop? That's the question. Is it because it's super beautiful and it's more than, what makes it different? What makes that visual make you want to stop? And I see the same thing with Facebook. You know, it may not be the most pretty image, but it's going to be the one that catches your attention. That old man jumping around on a pogo stick for an ad, you stop. Like, what in the world? You know, so I think that's going to be a more of a factor as we continue to, you know, be overwhelmed with content. I mean, everybody had a blog and it was like, how many blogs can I read? Because they're all good. And so you have to really pick and choose the ones that really speak to you. And I think it's the same way with visuals. The funny ones make you stop because you know it's gonna, you're going to get a dopamine hit because you're going to laugh or see something funny. And then some of them that's just like, there's an explosion on your little, on a Facebook ad. What was that? I'm going to click on it. Oh, it was for a vacuum, you know, but you still stopped. You know what I mean? So it's going to, and that's going to tell the algorithm that, oh, this is good content because they stopped. And so you'll get rewarded for that. So what is, so is everybody going to put exploding things? I mean, so it's this cycle of trying to be ahead of everyone else, let everybody else catch up, and then try to figure out what else is going to catch the eye. So that's what I find so fascinating. And I love visual marketing is because of that. Okay. I've got, it's almost like you got to beat the system and you've got to be just a little bit more creative than everybody else to stay ahead of the curve. So I think that's kind of, that's where I'm excited about seeing what's going on. So what do you think?
I was going to share a quick story.
Yeah.
I was talking to our friend Stephanie Liu about this just earlier this week. Mm-hmm. And we were talking about Facebook video thumbnails. A time ago where she would, she happened on this accidentally, I think, and then determined afterwards that she should do it on purpose, have the thumbnail, like the image of the video in freeze frame that people see first in their feed before the video starts, be one of the crazy expressions on her face. She'd be like, you know, that, that Facebook always wants to catch you in. And at first your natural compulsion is, okay, I got to change that right now because I look ridiculous on that video. But she was saying, because of the reasons you just said, it's funny, it's different, so it stands out. So as people are scrolling with their thumbs, they stop their thumb. But the other interesting thing that she said to me was that after a while, after that video, like, I don't know, a week maybe, that video is no longer really in the feed for people. She goes back and she edits it and puts in the nice professional looking thumbnail. So now if somebody goes to her videos tab on Facebook, they're not seeing all these goofy images of her. They're seeing the nice professional thumbnails. So that was really interesting to me because it kind of speaks to what you were saying. At first, you want to be on the cusp, right? You want to try to capture that trend, but you always got to be able to pull it back and say, okay, what's actually going to fit for me long-term in terms of my brand? I want that funny image at first to catch somebody's attention, but ultimately I want that professional representation of me and my brand.
And I think it goes back again to what network you're on, because I have Jeremy Vest, who is a really good YouTuber, and he talks about optimizing thumbnails. And it's not design. He calls it, this looks like rainbow vomit. It was just like everywhere. But it makes people stop. And if you look at the thumbnails that are working for the most people, I mean, some of them are just using, you know, they're so famous, it doesn't matter. But for most of them, the ones that are getting a lot of views, they have those crazy, there's a reason they're pointing and doing weird stuff. I mean, because it catches your eye. I've got another example for you. On Instagram, on Social Media Examiner's channel, we uploaded a tools video, and the thumbnail was that of me like going, sneezing, or looking like I was going to sneeze. And I said, I'm just going to let it go. That got the most views out of all of them, all of the videos that we put on for the past 3 months. And it's because of that image, because of that weird And people watched it. It wasn't like they just clicked on it and went, but they, for some reason. So that's what's fascinating to me. And so I'm going to have to get with Stephanie and we're going to have to do some more talking about that. Cause I think that's one of the, in fact, these repurposed videos that I do that have like flashes in them at the beginning is for that reason, because I want to see if it's going to make people stop in the feed. So, back to businesses and marketing. What do you think? Cause I asked this question when you were first on the show, those many moons ago, you know, what were businesses struggling the most in marketing and how can they fix it? Is it the same? Do you think has it changed, or is there new problems that businesses are facing in marketing? What would you say the biggest problem is? I want to see if your answer is the same.
Shoot. I didn't check my answer from back then. I know. I guess I don't want to guess what I would have said back then. What I would say today is one of the biggest issues is finding the time to create content, specifically written content. I don't know if that's what I said back then, but that's what I talk about a lot today, because that's usually what businesses are coming to me. Mike, I don't have time to write. Mike, I don't have time to publish a blog post every week. I just did a training this week in the 360 group about how to create and structure the content on your website so that you'll achieve the number one ranking mm-hmm. in a Google search result for a targeted keyword phrase. That sounds amazing to everybody in the audience, right? If you're in the audience right now and you want to get number one ranking in a Google keyword, in a Google search for a phrase that relates to your business, say yes, please, in the comments right now, because I'm guessing it's everybody.
Yeah, that's right.
You would want, I'm sure, to be the number one ranking for, you know, visual marketing, you know, or something along those lines, right? I wanted to be number one for how to start a blog. And so I was teaching them, you know, how do you do that? Not just from an individual SEO technique perspective, but how do you create layers of content and funnels of content so that you've got all this content that will bring people in and educate them and ultimately sell whatever it is you're trying to sell.
Right.
But here's the kicker. It's 13 pieces of content.
Yeah. Yeah. I knew you were going to say that. Yeah.
Everybody in my show was like, no, Mike, I don't want to write 13 pieces of content.
That's a lot. Yeah.
Like crying, you know, and like, oh, but so that's the number one problem. But we've already kind of touched on the solution a little bit here, which is to create video.
Yes. Oh, so yeah. I know where you're going now.
We can do video. Yeah. You know where I'm going.
Yeah.
You can do video. And you can use that to generate the written content. Now, it doesn't always work well in this format, right? Like if you're trying to rank well for a particular topic and you're bringing on a guest like me and you're interviewing me and you're talking about this thing, I may not say what you really need me to say mm-hmm. in the video, or maybe I will. Who knows? But I think most of the time you're going to be better off speaking to the camera and teaching your audience on that particular topic. And that's again where the writing comes into play, because just like you said, that's something you're going to want to write out first, whether you literally read the script or at least you have an outline and some good points and then you say it off the cuff. If you're that good, that's great. But you film that video first and then you turn that into a blog post or an article or an FAQ or whatever you want to do with it.
Right. Yeah. And we're going to make sure you have the link, because Mike wrote an incredible blog post on how to, you know, at what is it, 23 pieces out of one video? 26.
At least 26. See, I should least, say 26 yeah. plus, but yeah. I don't want to put special characters in the title. So 26 plus ways to repurpose a Facebook Live, just right. like what Jeff is doing right here with me.
Yeah. And so this thing is going to be, I mean, it becomes a podcast. It becomes a, it's going to have a bunch of video snippets out of it. I mean, that's what I love about videos, because like so many people that you mentioned, I struggle with writing. I mean, I can write. I just yeah. don't. It's like when I just eat glass, it's the same feeling I get when I have to write. So I just don't. It's not my favorite.
Laugh and cry a little bit internally. Yeah.
That's what happens when I write.
Trying to help you with blogging for a decade.
I know. That's why I do video. Because I feel when I eat glass, I laugh and cry at the same time. We're both big fans of repurposing, which is what we're talking about.
Yes.
Do you have any favorite tools for repurposing?
Oh yeah. We've been talking about one before the show, Headliner, headliner.app. Really falling in love with Headliner.
Right.
What I started using it for was audiograms, which are these cool little videos, right, that have a static image mm-hmm. usually overlaid with that little waveform and then voice. So it's perfect for podcasters. It's perfect for, well, it's perfect for video, but it's also perfect when you've got a video that maybe didn't go so well. You know, maybe you could just pull out the audio. I've got so many of those. I got to tell you, you know, you and I, we've been doing this since the Hangout on Air days.
Right, right.
And the video, the quality was so bad back then. And I've got videos that I did with Mark Schaefer, with Joe Pulizzi, with Guy Kawasaki. These are big names in our industry. And I would love to repurpose those videos, but the videos themselves aren't good. There's right. an interview that I did with Mark Schaefer where Mark's audio is perfect, but mine is not. So there's a big lag between everything that I say and then the actual, you know, movement right. of my mouth. So it's kind of annoying to watch me speak more so than usual. So with Headliner, I can pull out that audio
right.
and create an audiogram. And then they're adding new stuff, which I'm really excited about. They're adding, you know, video transcripts and, mm-hmm. and other ways that you can slice and dice those videos. So that's right. certainly a tool that's top of mind for me.
The other thing is you're going back. You're talking about businesses struggling with creating content. I think one of the things, and we're really bad at it as marketers in our space, we're telling people to put out content, put out content, put out content. When a lot of times we need to put out that content, take a breath, Because I know, like for me, I'm like thinking about the next piece of content. As soon as I hit publish, I'm like, okay, I got to do another one. Take a breath and actually chop that thing up and wring all the juice you can out of it. And I mean, it's like you said, how many, 27 pieces of content, you know, that's a lot of stuff that you can do out of one video. And so I think that for me at least, I'm trying to step back and go, okay, not going to freak out. And like, I've got to, you know, you see those people posting every day and the hashtag no sleep and all that. I'm like, I just want to take I have and really get it out there. Yeah. Hustle.
So, do you want me to run through all those things that you can do?
Yeah, go ahead. If you can rattle them off.
Yeah, because it starts with the Facebook Live, and I love that the further we get, it's like more things. So like by the end of the show, it'll be like the 87 things that you can do. We'll just keep adding to it.
Right.
But it starts with the Facebook Live, and specifically, it starts with a one-hour interview, exactly what we're doing right here. So for those of you watching at home, what you want to be thinking about is who can I bring on to a Facebook Live show and ask them questions and let them deliver the content. That's the key there, because that's less work for you. Not to say that this isn't a ton of work to do a show. I know what Jeff goes through, and I know I've been on the other side, but stick to the purpose, Mike. So we're going to do a Facebook Live. We're going to interview somebody for 1 hour. So you've got 1 hour of video. Now, the cool thing about starting with a Facebook Live, and that may be another platform, is that Facebook's going to build audience and get you people watching your show while you're live. And then once you're done live, that video stays on your Facebook page. You can make it a featured video if it's really awesome. And then you can download the video file. So now you've got a video file, that full 1 hour MP4 on your desktop. Well, you can upload that to YouTube. You can specify a thumbnail. You can put in the description, hit some tags, and use TubeBuddy if you really want to get super fancy with this, and hit some trending tags. And now you've got a YouTube channel going with your Facebook Live video content. But wait, there's more, right? Because you can take that video file and you can import it into iMovie or some other kind of free editing tool. Mm-hmm. And you can do what Jeff and I have been talking about this whole time, which is to slice that up into small bites. So you've got a guest, you've been asking them questions, maybe 8-10 questions over the course of a 1 hour interview. That means they've got 8 or 10 answers. That some of those are probably pretty good, particularly if you got a really good guest, right?
I
dropped some names earlier, some people that gave some really good answers to some really good questions. Like Mark, I got him talking about content shock for 20 minutes. That's some awesome content right there. So I can slice that out and turn that into small video segments that I can upload to YouTube, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, even Pinterest, right? And LinkedIn. You can do up to 10 minutes of video to LinkedIn. So now I'm feeding that social machine across all of my channels. And of course, I can upload the audio into Headliner and make little audiograms out of those same small clips. But wait, there's more. I can take iMovie and I can download just the audio for the entire video, a 1 hour audio clip. And I can add an intro and an outro and a bumper, which is what you do. And I can upload that to Libsyn, and Libsyn's going to push that out to iTunes, to Google Play, to Stitcher. And now I've got a podcast going and rocking my brand and reaching tons of people that way. Now, I mentioned earlier that this person that you're interviewing was talking and answering questions, which means they're probably dropping knowledge bombs left and right, and they're leaving you quotes. Well, you can pull out the quotes and just tweet those out as text. And you can also go into Canva or Easel and make quote graphics out of the things they said, which again is great social media activity and posts and content that you can share out, and little quote graphics that you can embed in other kinds of blog posts that you've been doing, right? But the best part is, if you get me talking for a full hour, what I've delivered to you is approximately 10,000 words, which you can turn into a blog post, which I already said. And that's an epic piece of content that will live on your blog and help power all the traffic and conversions that you're going to be getting through your site.
See, that's awesome. One of the things, and I've done a lot of that stuff because that's, like I said, I don't like to write. But one of the things that I found to help with all that process, the number one thing to do first is to take that and either use like Headliner does it, but also I use Rev, because sometimes it does a better job transcribing your audio because they have a live person instead of a AI.
Yeah.
So to me, that's worth it time-wise. But if you do that first, then it makes it a lot easier to go grab those quotes, to figure out where you need to chop the video, where you need to do all that stuff. So the first thing I do is when it's done, because Rev's great, you just send them a link to the video, they'll do it all, and then I can go and say, that was a great question, there's a great answer. Yeah. I can grab that and make it a video, a small video, or I can do the headliner thing, or I can... maybe the audio was garbled, but that can still be a great quote graphic. Mm-hmm. And so I think your point of like, even stuff that you thought wasn't good anymore, it's could be really, really valuable. Now I've got to go back and do all these. I have a ton of good stuff because I've got Guy Kawasaki on my show. And yeah, I've got tons of stuff. Yeah. So
Gary Goldstein.
Yes. Yes. Pretty Woman. That was a fun show, by the way. I learned a lot.
Yeah. He's awesome.
Yes.
You know, and one other app I've been testing is designer.io, designer with two R's. Mm-hmm. I just subscribed to their pro plan or whatever they call it today, which gives me 4 hours of transcription service for $50.
It's pretty awesome. Yeah. And that does a lot of other cool stuff.
If it's accurate, I don't know if it's great yet. We'll see.
Yeah. So that's some great tools for you guys. One of the things I wanted to talk about too, because we've talked about kind of marketing magic, and I think one of the biggest pieces that we haven't mentioned yet is social listening, especially for businesses. Mm-hmm. And this is something that's really great for that. I know Agora Pulse, that's why I use them. I mean, their scheduling stuff's great, but the social listening stuff is awesome. So can you explain what social listening is? And really quickly, because we're kind of running late, what the how businesses should be using it? Because I think... sometimes even doing that is almost better than creating great content. I mean, if you can really only put out one blog post a month, but also you're on top of the listening thing, I still think you're doing a pretty good job. What are your thoughts?
Yeah, well, there's kind of two aspects of it. And in AgoraPulse, we break it out into monitoring and listening specifically. On the monitoring side, you're paying attention to what's happening on your channels, on your posts. So if you just did what I walked you through with the repurposing and you created all these kinds of content, dozens of parts of that content were specifically for social media. So if you're sharing that out to all those different channels, you need to be paying attention to when people like, comment, and share that information so that you can engage with those people because they may be your potential subscribers, your potential customers. So you want to be paying attention to that. And that's one of the really cool things that AgoraPulse does. You've got this one inbox for each of your social channels where you can watch your mentions and your replies and your direct messages and so on in an easy stream. But you can also filter them, which is my favorite feature in all of AgoraPulse. It's that I can set a spam filter on my tweets so I don't see people asking me to follow them back or follow their Facebook page and all the other kinds of spammy things that people do on Twitter specifically, right? All that's filtered out. I don't see it. Now, I mean, obviously, if I go to Twitter, I'll see it. Or if I go to the All tab inside of AgoraPulse, I will see that stuff. But you can set up those kinds of rules that will listen for certain things and do something with it, usually filtered out. So that's the monitoring side. On the listening side, this is when we're listening for what other people are saying, typically not on our own channels. Right. A great example of that would be a local business who wants to pay attention to when people in their area are talking about something relevant to their business. Maybe you're a pizza delivery company and you want to pay attention to when, you know, people are talking about they're hungry on Twitter. I don't know. Maybe that's not a great example, but you can do that. You can do that on Twitter and you can do that within AgoraPulse. You set up a listening search for specific keywords and you can actually identify what we call a geofence, right? You specify your exact latitude and longitude, and that's easy to get from, you know, Google Maps, and then a mile radius. So you say, okay, I'm a delivery guy, and I'm only delivering within like 10 miles of this particular point, and I want to know everybody who wants to talk about pizza in this point. Maybe it's just you having conversations and fun with that, which is a great actual way to use social media. Let's have fun with the people who are talking about pizza in my area. They might not order from me tonight, but a week from now when they want to order pizza, they're going to remember me and the fun that they had on a Friday night talking to me about, you know, pizza toppings or whatever the case might be. And now I'm making everybody in the audience hungry.
I want some sticky pizza now.
So that's what you can be doing. You can be listening to keywords. You can be listening to specific users, right? You can monitor what your influencers, what your competition, you can monitor hashtags. So like a great example from our friend, Jen Herman, is when there's a conference coming up big in her industry, like we have social media marketing world coming up, right? She'll monitor that hashtag and she'll engage with those people. Nothing spammy, nothing inauthentic. She's just watching what people are saying and participating in the public conversations that are happening. Again, this is all mostly Twitter. It's not to say that you can't do some of these things on Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, and so on, but most of the other networks aren't as open as Twitter. Most of the other networks have limitations to what we call the API, which is the programming language. So just like you can't really go into Facebook and really watch what other people are talking about beyond your own friends, the tools don't really let you do that either. So Twitter's the best and the most open for this. And you can have a ton of fun listening and a ton of actual business results listening to what other people are talking about.
That's great. Man, I've got so many things I'm going to repurpose out of the heck out of this show. So keep an eye on the streams because we got a lot of stuff here. Mike, before we wrap it up, you know, where's the best place that people can connect with you, you know, read your blogs or where do you want people to know about you at?
Well, I do a lot of things. I mean, obviously we've been talking about GrowPulse because that's my full-time job. I've had a blog, the social media head for a long time. We've got the 360 marketing squad. But one of the cool things that I did that really just kind of warms my heart is in November, I did some rebranding and some repurposing and some relaunching. And now I'm the Blogging Brute. Yes. And that's thanks to you, Matt, because you called me the Blogging Brute all those years ago. That's a nickname that stuck around for lots of reasons. But I've got the bloggingbrute.com and I'm on the blog. I'm the Blogging Brute on all the social channels. So if you want to learn about blogging and you want to learn more about me personally, just look for the Blogging Brute.
Yes. And if you have any desire on learning how to blog or to write better, some of my favorite posts from Mike, he's a student of history too. And you'll see that woven into a lot of his posts, which I think is very, very awesome. So Mike, thanks so much for being on the show today. Sorry, we couldn't get the comments for you guys watching. I'll work on that. it's a new brand. So I'm working on it. But if you'd like to find out more about me, I would love to connect with you over at manlypinteresttips.com. We're always adding testosterone one pin at a time. See you next time, everybody.
Thank you for joining Jeff on his mission to help you be successful in the Pinterest world. Would you like to take part in a live show? Be sure to join Jeff's email community at manlypinteresttips.com. Adding testosterone, one pin at a time.